From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Easter weekend 2021. The Brewers continue their series this weekend with the Twinkies at American Family Field. And your Milwaukee Bucks are on a Western road trip all of next week. If COVID-19 is getting you down, here's a pick-me-up. How about a Corona burger? In Vietnam, you can get a burger with its bun shaped like the virus. Of course, the perfect pairing would be Corona beer. An industrious, entrepreneurial teenager. And who writes this stuff? Oh, wait, I do. An industrious, entrepreneurial teenager in the UK was suspended from school because he charged his classmates for hand sanitizer. He wasn't elected class president, but I'm sure one day many of those same kids, including the principal, will all be working for this kid. Remember the mullet hairdo? Business in the front, party in the back. Well, Trinity College in Perth, Australia has banned them and called them unacceptable. Oh, crikey, that'll wipe out the rugby team. Now, if you're reluctant to get vaccinated, I have one more reason for you to take that shot. It makes you more desirable for dating. Also, I'm pretty sure COVID-19 isn't the only contagious disease that interferes with dating. And finally, from Florida, the Tavares, Florida Police Department is offering to test your drugs to make sure they're not contaminated with the coronavirus. Yeah, fool me once. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Chris Evers, Mike Helzel, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thank you, Max. A great end to the first quarter, Wednesday this week, and a short trading week with the celebration of Good Friday. And so we will have, just 4 days of trading. We close today, April 1st, with a pretty meaningfully positive week for the NASDAQ, up 2.3% for the week, closing today at 13,439. Broader markets, also a good week, though not quite as good. The S&P 500 up 0.9%, closing above 4,000 for the first time today at 4,009. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average closing at the bell today up 145 points at 33,127. That's up 0.2% for the week. For the year, the NASDAQ now up 4.4%, the S&P 500 7.1%, and the Dow Jones up 8.7%. Quick look at the 10-year U.S. Treasury. The yield on the benchmark Treasury moved from 1.66% at the start of the week to 1.68% as we close the week. And that's just a quick look at the four-day week for the stock market. You know, I think as we maybe jump off here, Art, and look at, I think what's been most important over really the first quarter of the year, it was absolutely a crazy quarter with everything from these meme stocks, things like GameStop, having, really a big say over investment news for much of the quarter. We had a pretty significant rotation within stocks. We had, kind of the mainstreaming of these non-fungible tokens, things that, maybe don't warrant much conversation here on the podcast, but just from an investor perspective, I think really what we've seen is that investors are just really bored of this pandemic. They're looking for just about whatever they can find to try to keep interest, whatever they can find to maybe pass the time as we get closer. And so, I think as you look at what took place, and again, a really strong first quarter for the S&P up 6.2%, but there's a lot of lessons, I think, a lot of takeaways from that first quarter. Art, what kinds of things are you looking at as we put that first quarter in the books now?
Yeah, Kyle, that's a great summary of what just happened and sort of kind of why. But you use the term investors with respect to those who are bored. We long-term investors really aren't bored. We're just doing what we normally do. We're getting in our SUVs and plowing through the snow and making some money at the end of the day. So these speculators who are screwing around with stocks like GameStop and AMC and the hedge fund that recently blew up, That's background noise. And if we can get through that and stay focused on our objective of making money over the long haul, we're going to do a lot better. And I think we did. The biggest thing that happened this quarter, as you and I have discussed, as we've all discussed on a regular basis, is this rotation that's taken place between growth stocks and value stocks. So it's unusual to see the NASDAQ as the laggard among these three indices, you know, in a quarter or in a week. Now, fortunately, the NASDAQ came back a little bit this week, but I think it's very important not to get knocked off course. Again, as we're moving forward and trying to make money the old-fashioned way by, you know, being well-diversified, well-balanced. And the 12-month numbers are just amazing. We're seeing that in reviews. Kyle, you've talked about that on the show. We've talked about that repeatedly. I did my first reviews of the new quarter today, and the 12-month figures in our Morningstar portals are just astounding. So investors shouldn't lose sight of the fact that we were 1 week off of the bottom as of the end of March. Last year. And so you're going to see some spectacular numbers if you've been invested over that time period. So going forward, I think we have a lot of good news, more stimulus coming into the economy recently passed, and then some other proposed. So I'm cautiously optimistic, to say the least. So I'm pretty excited we got one quarter out of the way.
Chris, I think, you know, Art mentioned the hedge fund collapse. Certainly, you know, the GameStop trades, the AMC trades created a lot of noise, created a lot of potential losses. We're hearing now with this latest family office closing its shop and liquidating that some trading desks, prime brokerages might be on the hook for potentially tens of billions in losses. Now, granted, those are large numbers for you and I, and certainly for most investors. For some of these trading firms, maybe not quite as big as of a deal long term. Obviously, it's going to have a short term impact on the bottom line. But I think, you know, there's the actual headlines, and then there's some lessons we can take away as actual investors instead of traders. I think Art rightfully pointing out about what kinds of things we can learn from these kinds of collapses.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, you look at the trading that goes on, you know, by some of these hedge funds or family offices that are run by hedge fund managers. And you compare that also to, you know, the meme stock trading and the NFTs. And a lot of it comes down to people risking what they have, you know, to try to get what you don't need. You know, and that's a big lesson, I think, for all investors is why risk what you have to get what you don't need? And you know, as you look at what happened here, you had a billionaire that was taking incredible amounts of risk with leverage and ended up getting caught in the wrong direction and losing everything. And you just wonder yourself, why in the world would anybody take that type of risk? And I think, you know, obviously it's a very different scenario, but you should just remind yourself that, you know, the desire to get rich is something that's true for everybody. And you always have to fight that urge and realize that the returns usually come with time. There's no get rich quick schemes that won't end up hurting you at the end.
I think it's always fair to point out that there's a reason the word scheme shows up in get rich quick schemes. it's not a plan. It's not a strategy. It's absolutely a scheme. And Mike, you know, as you talk to clients, the plan piece is what's so important, right? As we look at, you know, Chris said, risk what you have to get what you don't need. You know, how do you help clients focus on what they really need from their investments as opposed to, you know, focusing on schemes?
So I equated it to this. As some of my clients know and some of you guys know, I like to go to the desert paradise that is Las Vegas once in a while, right? And I equated these, I see Art smiling there. I equated the, like, you know, the GameStops and the NFTs to, I mean, you're gambling, right? You're basically gambling on something. Now, the people that go to Vegas looking to get rich quick, the house usually beats them and busts them out, right? And they leave with nothing. Like when Chris said, you don't really have to do that. The people that enjoy Vegas the most and know what they're doing are basically you have a budget. It sounds kind of ridiculous, but you have a budget for gambling. The amount you can lose. If you want to invest in your NFTs or your GameStops or whatever like that with a certain amount of money that you can lose and you're not adding too much risk to your portfolio or like you're not adding much risk because you can afford to lose it, go ahead. It's totally up to you. We're not going to get in with, you know, we're not going to do that for you. But if you're looking to make money on something that you really don't know anything about, that you're just kind of flying by the seat of your pants because someone else is doing it or you heard someone on TV do it, more times than not, you are going to bust out big time. And you're seeing that now with all the examples you guys have already mentioned.
You know, I think it's such a great point, and it really stresses that much of what happened in the first quarter was betting and not investing. And you know, that's not true of what we do, certainly, that we've taken the longer term view. We've avoided placing those bets. But, you know, I think there were a lot of people out there who call themselves investors and maybe incorrectly call themselves investors, much more akin to gamblers. And I think the old saying is you bet with your head, not over it. And what we saw in the first quarter is that a lot of people were in way over their heads. And so that can lead to some short term volatility. We've certainly seen that. And again, I think short term, you prepare for that kind of volatility with the expectation that if longer term, you're optimistic about your investments, not your gambles, but your investments, that, you know, those are going to pan out. And so, you know, we saw some rotation from growth stocks into value stocks. We had certainly thought that that was an investment trend that would be developing. It appears fairly likely at this point that it should continue to develop, if not continue with the advantage it's had, at least continue to push forward where it is. I think the other big thing we saw, though, was a pretty significant shift in interest rates. And Art, I know this is a conversation you have with clients all the time. It's certainly something we've talked about here on the podcast quite a bit. But I think the most important thing for investors to understand as it relates to their bond portfolio is just how simple the relationship is between bond interest rates, right? What happens with the yield on the 10-year treasury and what happens to the value of their bonds and bond funds. And so maybe just walk us through the simple math and, you know, then we can have maybe a conversation about why it's not all bad news.
Sure. Great question. Let's hope this helps. When interest rates go up, the value of bonds go down. That's point one. That's just the way it works. But it's mathematical. If you buy a bond and it's yielding 5% and interest rates move up, so you can now buy a bond that's yielding 10%, then what you hold has lost value because of that rise in interest rates. You can get more for less, in short. But it's not, it's a simple concept for us to discuss. In reality, we know that interest rates go up and down. There are cycles over time. We know that we were at historically low rates for the yield on the 10-year treasury. We know that we are at historically low short-term interest rates at this point. And we know that inevitably, as the economy strengthens, as we get some inflation, as unemployment improves, the Fed has said they will start doing something different when they have to, after inflation is firmly embedded, after employment is back to where it should be. And Chairman Powell doesn't even have to say read my lips. He's repeated it over and over and over again. But nonetheless, interest rates jumped this year, literally almost doubled, I think, the yield on the 10-year treasury from the beginning of the year till now. So when that happens, there's a factor that we use that is, you know, called duration. And that's a measure, and I think you've written about that recently as well, that tells us how much you can expect the value of a bond to decline as yields rise. And it's very simple. If the yield on the 10-year treasury goes up 1%, depending on the duration of your portfolio, that figure tells you how much you're going to lose. But the reason that is, it's important for us to understand that, it's important for our clients to understand that we deliberately don't go too far out on the yield curve so that we have durations that are appropriate for the long-term and short-term investment objectives for our portfolios. So it's our responsibility to protect our clients, not to take excessive risk, not to have too high of durations. And interest rates could go down, as they just did today, fairly substantially, even though we were, I think, slightly higher for the week, you indicated. But, you know, over time, just be careful. Don't take excessive risk in your bonds, just like we don't think you should take excessive risk in your stocks. But, you know, sort of leave the driving to us. We'll make sure, you know, you're in the right stuff, you know, hopefully for the long haul.
No, I think that's such a good explanation, Art. And really, understanding the relationship is important, but also understanding longer term how that relationship breaks down, because, you know, the relationship is very immediate in nature, up 1% in rates, and a bond portfolio with a duration of 4 loses 4%. But that's, you know, while the rates are rising. But remember that, you know, I think the important part is rates are now 1% higher. And so, you know, Chris, the obvious next question is, okay, what does that 1% higher rate mean for bond investors, right?
Yeah, if you're a longer term bond investor, or really any investor that's partaking in the fixed income market, you do want to see rates normalize to a higher, more normal rate. It's because that means you're going to get higher yield going forward. You know, those bonds that you have in your portfolio are reinvesting at higher rates. You know, the worst case scenario for you as a bond investor is interest rates stay down in 1% in perpetuity, and you've pretty much locked in that's about as best as you can get. You know, if rates do rise and, you know, say the 10-year gets back to 2.5 and you're making a little bit better money on your bond investments, sure, you might take a little bit of a haircut in the short term, but now you're investing in bonds that are going to compound and earn interest at a much higher rate going forward. And that's the benefit to you. And I think if you take a step back and look at where interest rates are, I mean, we're talking general direction of where rates are going. But even if you look over the last 10 years since the great financial crisis, I mean, the 10-year interest rate was within a trading range of about 1.5% to about 3%. I think we should see that as kind of the normal rate of interest rates. So when we were down below 1 in the 0.6, 0.8 range, getting back to that 1.5 to 2, that's not concerning that rates are flying high. That's a matter of we're just getting back to that same range we're at when the economy was standing at its own 2 feet.
Yeah, I think, you know, the important part to remember is that rising rates are a sign that the economy is recovering, that it's absolutely a healthy thing. And the other part of that, I think, is that, you know, we saw some larger holders of treasuries, such as the Bank of Japan and some other banks within Japan, forced into selling because they wanted to dress the windows of their portfolio for the end of the quarter. And that happened back in February, early March. It drove yields even higher than they had gone earlier in the year. And then as a response to that, we had other investors in treasuries also selling their treasuries, seeing rates go higher, worried about what was going to happen. And so I think it's a strong reminder that not just in the stock market, but also in the bond market, there are these technical feedback loops that have nothing to do with longer term fundamentals. They have nothing to do with what we truly expect to happen with things like inflation and economic growth. But instead, they're driven by one investor seeing what a larger investor is doing and feeling the need to respond. And, you know, again, that happens pretty frequently in stocks. It's why we have these huge priceless dislocations at times. But it's interesting in that we've seen it in bond markets, certainly in the past, but even more so now with how quickly the 10-year moved higher. I think the piece that scared so many people about the interest rate move higher was what it meant about what our expectations were for inflation. And certainly there are transient inflationary pressures, transient being the word that the Fed and other economists keep throwing out. The idea that there are some short-term things that could cause prices to rise in certain areas. But none of those things point to an economic growth environment or an inflationary environment that long-term is above average. Maybe we get back to average, and I think that'd be a really good thing. And it would be really good for expectations and really good for the economy overall if people expected that prices will slowly rise over time. But we're still not there. We still are in an environment in which inflation is well below target. And beyond that, you know, the concerns are, you know, Mike, last week we had a ship blocking the Suez Canal. We've got, you know, a vastly different set of demands during this pandemic than what we had leading up to it. You look at Peloton bikes and you look at rowers that people didn't have any interest for when they could pay 30, 40, 50 bucks for a gym membership. Now, all of a sudden, you don't want to go to the gym. You got to get that stuff at home. And so there have been some pretty significant changes in demand. Add in, you know, as I said, the canal blockage last week, add in some of the port stoppages. You know, I think reasonable to assume that, you know, some of those are transient, but reasonable to assume that there'll be a little inflation in some of those places as well.
Yeah, I mean, some clients of mine have asked about the inflationary stuff that you guys have touched on already. And like you, I mean, I may rehash some stuff, but I don't necessarily see it being a massive issue kind of with the market. In terms of the change of demands that we're seeing, again, you mentioned I'm talking to clients, friends and stuff, and kind of the shift in buying has been to kind of set up their own houses, their own kind of quote unquote safe spaces where they are, you know, because they're going to be spending so much time there. Now, I do think that will kind of change here gradually as the year goes on, as more and more people get, you know, vaccinated, as the numbers we're seeing go up, they're going to, because as nice as your houses are and as much stuff as you set up in your house, I think let's all be honest, we all want to go somewhere and go somewhere soon, whether it's to your favorite restaurant, your movie theater, ball game, wherever. And so I think you are going to see a shift in demand here. I mean, I'll just say generally second half of the year, without, you know, I'm not going to pin down a date, but I think you are going to see that shift when it takes place. It's going to take place pretty quickly, I think.
And Mike, we'll be chasing, you know, as suppliers, whether it's manufacturers or whether it's the providers of services like, you know, airline travel, hotels, we'll be chasing that demand for a little while. We had taken a lot of things offline because they weren't needed. A lot of restaurants closed. A lot of hotels have been have gone from being, you know, fully available to book to taking rooms out of inventory for remodels and stuff. And, you know, that isn't all going to be done the day that everyone decides to travel again. And so I think, you know, as we talk about some of those transient inflationary pressures, that's one of the big reasons why it's transient. I think the other piece that you rightfully point out, though, is that we're reaching that point where people are ready to start getting out again. You know, just to put some numbers on it, we've got 140 million people vaccinated in the first quarter of this year, 55 million Americans now fully vaccinated. And so the more data we get that says not only are these people vaccinated, not only does it protect them, but it protects the people around them as well. And the closer we get to that magic number of herd immunity, I think the more what you're talking about is absolutely going to be the case. And whether that's, you know, into May, into June, into July, into the second half of the year, your guess is probably as good as mine on the exact timing. But we do know that as, you know, more of the good information starts to come out, that, you know, that's going to be a bigger trend. And Chris, I think, you know, you kind of tracked the indicators for us this week. In particular, you know, one that has jumped out to me is the ISM manufacturing numbers. You know, I think continuing to point out that manufacturers are seeing some of this demand, that they absolutely are talking about what it means for their ability to keep up.
Yeah, so on this Thursday, we had updated numbers for March on the ISM Manufacturing Index, which is a survey of manufacturing professionals. And it showed, you know, the 10th straight month of gains. And if you read into the survey and what many of the respondents are saying, absolutely, they're indicating that they see very strong demand out there. And then anecdotally, you know, what you had pointed to of transitory issues, you know, they pointed to as well of, you know, some logistics issues of be it Suez Canal or ports being backed up and difficulty specifically in the end of February with the cold weather that went through the South and what that did to some of their supply chains. So, you know, they pointed to, yes, demand is very strong. We're having a little bit of issues making sure we can meet that demand because as we've talked about on this show, the economy is not really meant to be an on-off switch where businesses shut down hard and then, you know, immediately flip back on with all this pent-up demand. That's going to be very difficult for them to handle, but they're showing that the demand is there and they're working through many of the issues. And it was a strong reading again on Thursday.
And data on consumer confidence this week as well, right?
Yep, another strong reading on consumer confidence, the strongest that we've had since before the pandemic, which is, you know, a leading indicator of what we can kind of expect for retail sales and consumer spending in the back end of the year, which again, we've talked about of, you know, people are feeling better as vaccines roll out, as asset prices rise, both, you know, housing market in terms of home values, as well as, you know, stocks and bonds in terms of seeing their portfolio values rise, that works its way into consumer confidence. And the more confident the consumer, the more likely they are to go out and spend, which we know is a big piece of domestic GDP here.
And maybe one more big one for the week that hits fairly close to home for you, obviously, some paired sales, housing data, like, you know, suggesting, I think, again, that housing prices continue to just go sky high.
It's an unbelievable housing market right now. And there's a couple of, you know, a couple of variables that are really pushing this. The most important one is likely extremely low inventory. So inventory is at around 1 million homes or about 2 months worth of supply, which is some of the lowest inventory that we have seen in decades. While at the same time, we have historically low interest rates, where people in mostly February were able to borrow on a 30-year mortgage at about 2.5, 2.6%, which resulted in the home price index showing year-over-year gains of double digits, which was the highest, again, since before the Great Financial Crisis. So we're seeing really strong growth in housing demand, but just not having the supply to meet it. And, you know, while you would hope, hey, home builders could go out there and develop some more homes to meet this demand of all these people looking to purchase homes, now you have the issue that lumber prices are up north of 100% over the last year, copper prices up maybe 50%. And you just can't build a home in 2 weeks just because there's people out there wanting to buy. So you have these various dynamics that are pushing up home prices. But mostly structurally, it's good. You know, they're good buyers, good credit ratings. People are putting money down on homes. And it's just changing tastes and preferences and a lack of supply out there.
You know, I think continue to see the economic data point towards, if not growth, at least stabilization. Growth in some key areas like manufacturing, certainly, that suggest that if we can continue to get good news on the virus front, if we can continue to see, progress in treatments and vaccines, that, the economy is strong enough now that it can begin to grow on its own. It's just a function of alleviating the pressure that the pandemic has put on it. And so I think encouraging to see some more good news this week from the economy, encouraging to see the markets participating along with that. As I mentioned at the open, the first time above 4,000 for the S&P 500, which is a pretty big deal, a pretty big number when you consider just how far we've come really in the span of a year. So, thanks for listening, everybody. We enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.